So, when I was living in New York City, I didn't see a lot of fall leaves. When fall came, I'd spot a few trees along the street turning red and gold, and I knew that their leaves would fall, but I rarely saw them fall. I didn't get that crunch, crunch, crunch sound from walking in leaves because as those leaves fell, the super of the building would come out, sweep them into the street, and that would be it. But now that I'm living here in New Jersey, I have the exact opposite experience. There's an amazing number of beautiful trees, gold, red, orange, and they all decided this week, actually yesterday, that they were just going to give up. There are leaves everywhere. I can watch them fall outside my window, they land on me when I go outside, and instead of just crunch, 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 I'm slipping on them as I try to go up and down stairs. The world is buried by an abundance of leaves. So yesterday, as I raked an incredible amount of yellow and gold leaves into a giant pile, I had this parable from Matthew stuck in my mind. As the pile grew bigger and bigger, it reminded me of an image I grew up with and still see from time to time on TV and in cartoons. And that's Scrooge McDuck's swimming pool. I mean, when I imagine what an abundant amount of wealth and money looks like, a giant vault-like swimming pool filled with gold, jewels, and cash is totally it. But our parable today is about more than just money or being rich. This parable is about the concept of abundance and just how to reframe ourselves so that we act and breathe and live through the reality of God's abundance in our lives, even though that abundance can be very, very hard to see. So Jesus starts this parable in a very interesting way. He doesn't talk about the kingdom of heaven or the kingdom of God. No, he instead is building on what we heard last week, the parable of the bridesmaids with lamps, and the final words from Jesus to keep awake. But instead of bridesmaids this week, we have a rich man, a journey, three slaves, and what happens when that rich man gives his slaves an incredible sum of money to watch over while he's gone. Now, we need to realize that when we hear the word talent, we're not talking about an ability. The rich man doesn't give one of his slaves five skills, like making him an incredible dancer or cook. No, a talent is an actual measure of wealth. So for those of us who get a paycheck or a Social Security or maybe just an allowance, imagine if you reached into your pocket and found a roll of cash with 20 years of your wages on it. That's one talent. So this rich man is about to take a journey, and he gives one of his slaves five talents, another two talents, and another one. He's giving away 100 years of wages, 40 years of wages, and then 20 years of wages. That's how much money this guy has. And he gives it to these three slaves with no instructions, no rules, no requirements. He just gives it away, leaves, and lets the slaves do what they wish. Now, what would you do if you suddenly had 100 years of wages in your hand right now? Well, the first two slaves get busy. They go out, wheel and deal, and double their money. The slave with 100 years worth of money now has 200, and the slave with 40 now has 80. But the third one does something very different. He takes that money and buries it. Now, that might seem odd to us, but burying money was something people did in Jesus' time. That slave took the money and buried it to protect it, so that none of it would be lost. He was given 20 years of wages and did nothing with it, but he didn't lose it. So the rich man comes back and he asks his slaves what happened to the wealth he gave them. The first and second slave tell the rich man that they doubled his money, and this makes the rich man happy. He promises each slave that he'll give them more responsibility, more wealth, more power in the future. But the slave who hid that talent comes forward and, maybe noticing that the other two doubled their money, he begins to explain himself. Now, his explanation might seem a little odd to us, but it makes sense in his context. In Jesus' time, it was believed that there was a finite and static amount of wealth in the world. If you made money, you had to have taken it from someone else. For this rich man to have his own swimming pool of gold and money, he must have taken all that money and gold from someone else. You only get wealthy if someone else gets poorer. And so this slave, thinking this way, was afraid. The rich man got wealthy by taking from others, and the slave was afraid of what would happen if he ended up with no money left, if he ended up making someone else richer and the rich man poorer. So the slave played it safe and brought back the talent to the rich man. And then the rich man does something very strange. He gets mad. We need to be careful at this point not to focus too much on the success of the two slaves. Sure, they doubled their money and the rich man seems happy about it. But that rich man gets angry with his third slave not over money, but because of the slave's inaction. If we go back to the start of the parable, we see that each slave was given a certain amount of wealth according to their ability. The rich man didn't need more money. He's going on a trip. And the slaves don't even think about taking his money or running away or buying their freedom and no longer being slaves. This rich man is so comfortable in his position of authority and power that more money, more wealth won't change who he is or what he can do. Instead, he gives out of his abundance to these slaves and gives them no instructions. He portions out the wealth in the amounts that he knows these slaves could do something with. So when the rich man looks at the third slave and gets angry, he even tells the slave that the least he could have done was to do something that the writings in the Old Testament are very much against, and that's put the money in the bank to get interest. Now, this isn't a parable about money or about material wealth. This is a parable about living out of a place of abundance. That third slave was locked in a mindset of scarcity. He was worried about what would happen when he lost it all. But the rich man didn't need more money, and the slaves didn't need more money either. Money isn't what defined them, because money wasn't really what they were given. What they were given was abundance, and they were challenged to live out of that abundance rather than out of the fear of losing it. That challenge, to live out of a sense of abundance, that was difficult in Jesus' time, and that's difficult in ours too. Turn on the TV to BBC America and watch an episode of Top Gear, and we'll see an amazing car that we'll never be able to afford. Open our mail, and there might be a medical expense, credit card debt, a student loan payment, or another reminder that we're not as abundant as we'd like to be. And isn't there always another thing on our unending to-do list? Another kid to pick up, homework to turn in, project to finish, errand to run, or challenge to overcome. Time and money, these define our sense of abundance. We've got too much to do, not enough time to do it, and not enough money to really live the life we expect. Scarcity can feel very much like a squeezing, like trying to tread water during a tropical storm. The instinct is to turn inward, to conserve, to draw our arms tight around ourselves and push everyone out. The fear of being swamped by one more wave, one more bill, one more unexpected experience, that turns us to just go ahead and protect ourselves. We bury our ability to take risks, our ability to change, our willingness to try something we haven't tried before, because we're too busy trying to not lose what we have around us. But that's not what God has in mind for us. This text isn't about scaring us. This text is about giving shape to where the Christian life begins. And that life begins firmly in the one who, when nailed to the cross, looked like a complete opposite of abundance. The opposite of security. He was the pure essence of scarcity. Abandoned by his friends, arrested and tortured by the ones who occupied his homeland, and he felt completely abandoned by God. The Christian life begins there, in the one who was broken, but who was about to do a very brand new thing. The text isn't telling us to be afraid of brokenness or to never be afraid at all. We're human, we're going to feel fear, we're going to be scared. But fear, failure, and scarcity doesn't define us. Fear, failure, and scarcity doesn't make us who we are. And we shouldn't let those limit whose we are. In a minute, we're going to get a little abundant in our life together here at Christ Lutheran. I'm going to invite Jackson Chase Tomasa to come on up here with his family and sponsors, and we're going to baptize him. We're going to bear public witness to God's love of Jackson, God's claiming of Jackson, God's promise to make Jackson brand new. And we're going to do it in a very scarce way. We'll use only a few words, only a few prayers, and we'll only use a little bit of water in our small font. Yet in these very small and ordinary things, we're going to live abundantly. We're going to hear God's promise to Jackson to always be by his side. We're going to hear about God's promise to lead Jackson to the Son on the cross. We're going to hear about God's promise to love Jackson, not because Jackson will always be perfect, but because God's promises are. We're going to proclaim that God's abundant care for this world is going to be shown in this little bit of water, this little bit of words, and in this little human being. We're going to show that abundance isn't defined by quantity. It isn't defined by absurd numbers or extravagance. No, the abundance that we proclaim, the abundance that we live into, the abundance that feeds us, nourishes us, and changes us, that's God's abundance. We're invited to continue to live out of that sense of abundance. We're called to not let scarcity define us. We're told to not conserve, but to share. Not to hold back, but to proclaim. Not to retreat, but to go out. To meet our neighbors in Woodcliff Lake, Hillsdale, Park Ridge, and beyond. To know them. To know their communities. To know their needs, hopes, wants. Their troubles, sorrows, and joys. And to live abundantly with them. Not because we're perfect, or because we're fearless, or because we're always going to double our money and never fail. No, we live abundantly. Because like the leaves outside that are piled in the street, in our yards, and on our cars, we are claimed by that God whose love for us, love for our friends, love for our neighbors, and love for this entire world is completely, 100%, totally boundless. To love. That's our invitation. That's our calling. And Jackson, that's your calling too. We welcome you to a new experience and a new life that calls all of us to be, to do, and to see the world as abundantly brand new. Amen.